And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are here on a Thursday. It is April 8th. We are getting ready for the start of our second weekend of the 2021 Major League Baseball season. Michael Beller and Derek Van Riper with you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, you can see that we have a guest, and this is going to be something we do every Thursday, bringing on one, two, three, however many of our Athletic MLB beat writers. Today, we get things started with Dan Connolly, who covers the Baltimore Orioles. So, Dan, thanks for taking this maiden voyage with us. Obviously, we've had you guys on before, but as a regular feature of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast, this is a first. So, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we wanted to do something a little different, right? A lot of fantasy baseball podcasts out there. We are the one that can tap into this great, vast network of beat writers that we have at The Athletic. And we thought, who better to get it from than the people who are watching these teams day in, day out, watching these players day in, day out. And one of the players who has jumped out in the fantasy baseball world that you have got to watch every single day so far, Dan, is Cedric Mullins. We knew he was going to have this opportunity to lead off for the Orioles. Toward the end of spring training, that became very clear, and that got him actually onto the fantasy baseball radar because of that opportunity to lead off. And he has done quite a bit with it. A very nice start to the season for Cedric Mullins. Just based on what you're seeing, your eyeball scouting report, what's been working for him so far?
Well, when he came into spring training, he had been a switch hitter pretty much all his life since high school. And he wasn't particularly good against left-handers, batting left-hand. I mean, he would switch to the right side and wasn't good against left-handers. So they decided to scrap it. Just a left hand all the time, 100%, even against left-handers. This is a real confident guy. And he started having a little bit of success in spring training against lefties. And I think that's really honestly been the difference. I mean, he like I said, he's confident. He believes himself in, you know, he was given this job in 2019, the starting center field job with the Orioles after Adam Jones left. He came up in 18, replaced Jones a little bit, did well. Then they handed him the job in 2019, and it was disaster. And he was sent all the way down to Double A. And so last year he fought his way back, played pretty well. And then when he had this opportunity to pretty much, you know, either get 100% or a large chunk of the center field job and batting left-handed only, it just seemed all kind of came together for him. And he's, I mean, I think he's for real, guys. I don't know if he's going to hit 529 and you know, 25 home runs, but I think he's a legitimate center fielder and even a fantasy guy with the steals he can amass for you.
Do you think he stays at the top of the lineup, too, as more outfielders get healthy for this team?
Absolutely. The only chance that changes is if he really starts to struggle, Austin Hayes comes back and is healthy. But, you know, the Austin Hayes thing, it's funny, and I'm going to pat myself on the back here. Last year, I told all you guys Santander was the guy to pick up, yep. And I was right. And this year, when you guys asked me, I said that whoever wins the center field job would be the guy to go after, either Mullins or Hayes, or both, if they both got in the lineup. And it looked like they both started every game until Hayes got hurt. Hayes right. is a real talent here, guys, but he has such trouble staying on the field. And so Mullins, who's also a small guy, he doesn't play like Hayes plays with his hair on fire all the time. He's a fun guy to watch. He doesn't use batting gloves. He's one of those gritty guys. But, you know, he ends up getting himself hurt here and there, and Mullins has been able to stay healthy. And so Mullins is their leadoff guy. He's their table setter. He's their spark. Unless, you know, he really kind of drops and doesn't play well, and they have to move him out of that spot. But as long as he is productive up there, he's going to be their leadoff hitter probably of 155 games this year.
How do things change with the expected return very soon of DJ Stewart?
Not a whole lot. I mean, you know, Stewart is not a particularly good defensive outfielder. Mm-hmm. He can hit when he is, you know, when he's going well. And we saw that when he hit like six home runs in six games in September. But, you know, because of some of the defensive liabilities, because, you know, they you know, when and I should say, shouldn't say if, I should say when Hayes returns, you know, you're kind of crowding that outfield again because you have Mountcastle as well. And left, Santander is definitely your right fielder, Mullins your center fielder. So Store will get some DH at-bats and he'll get some time in the outfield. But I don't foresee him being a guy who is going to get, you know, who's going to play five or six times a week to start. He's more of a three or four guy time, you know, start kind of guy. They'll put him in there. He'll play left. He'll play a little right. He'll play some DH. But I don't think it's going to change all that much, honestly.
The closer situation has been a surprise to many of us to begin the season. I think for those of us who follow the draft skills, not roles mantra, Tanner Scott was probably the most interesting reliever in the Baltimore bullpen, but it's been Cesar Valdez, a 36-year-old, getting saves so far. He pitched 2 1/3 innings last night against the Yankees, struck out three, hasn't allowed an earned run yet through the first three appearances. We're talking about a guy that throws his changeup about 85% of the time, Dan. I don't think I've ever seen a closer quite like this. How long can this possibly work?
Well, you know, how long can it possibly work as him as a closer? I would say at any day it could stop. But as far as how long will his stuff play and his stuff work and he can get outs, I don't know. He did this all, you know, when they brought him up last year. They saw him play in winter league ball and really liked him because he was just – he confuses everybody. Yesterday, his first – he got three strikes. I don't remember which batter it was, but one of the Yankees – got him 1, 2, 3 strikes. Nothing was over 80 miles an hour. It was 76, 79, 79. He got him. You know, it's incredible. And he's completely different. The problem here from a fantasy standpoint is that the Orioles don't do closers. Right now, they've pretty much since 2018. I think you have to go back to Zach Britton in 2016 for a guy who had more than 20 saves for the Orioles. It's particularly obvious with guy, you know, with since Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias took over, you know, Hyde says he would love to have that guy he just gives the ball to in the ninth. He doesn't have that guy necessarily. Like you said, Scott has those skills, but it's going to be a mix and match all year. And, you know, last year, Cole Sulcer led the Orioles with 5 saves. And, you know, and he ended up not being a closer and they took him out and they put other people in. Scott had the best stuff and he had 1. Harvey's hurt right now. So right now, it's probably Valdez if he is rested and in the ninth inning because Hyde believes he can get outs and he can get, you know, weak contact, hit the ball on the ground, that kind of stuff. You know, will the shoe finally fall off of him? Probably. This is the major leagues, but you know, he's a 36-year-old junk baller and he's making it happen. So I wouldn't invest a whole lot of money in Cesar Valdez, but enjoy it while it lasts because I think he's going to get the ball right now more times than not in the ninth inning.
Yeah, definitely one of the more fun stories that we've had in the first week of the season. One of the more fun stories of opening day was John Means dominating the Red Sox and had a rough go of it or pitched around a lot of trouble in his second start of the season just last night against the Yankees. Obviously, it's going to be a little early to take a ton away from a starting pitcher's pitch mix, but there are some things happening with Means that jumped out at me. The first of them was with his changeup. He's already got like half as many changeups or half as many whiffs, excuse me, on his changeup in his first two starts this year that he got all of last year. He's thrown about 1/3 as many changeups this year that he did in the 2020 season. Is this variance? Does it the pitch look different to you at all? How do we explain this? Is there any explaining it?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but I think you have to go to John Means' narrative to get a sense of where we are right now. You know, this was a guy who kind of came out of nowhere, finished second in the American League Rookie of the Year race in 2019. In the middle of 2019, in August, he finds out his father, who he's exceptionally close with, who's only 56 years old, has pancreatic cancer, stage 4, and it's a devastating blow to him, to the family. And he basically lasts a year. And he died in mid-August last year. And Means was dealing with all of this. His wife had a miscarriage. He was dealing with his own some arm trouble. And so when he got back after his father passed away, he had three disastrous starts. Absolutely terrible. Couldn't get out of the fourth inning. And he was pitching angry. He was pitching really mad. I think he was just trying to throw it as hard as he possibly could. He was, every time something happened on the bases, he got rattled, which is not who he is. Probably his biggest strength is his composure on the mound. He said he would come off the mound and start screaming at himself in the dugout and whatever. Brandon Hyde took him aside after that fourth game and was like, "What's the deal, dude? Who are you? This isn't you." And he decided from that point on, he was just going to be calm. Like his father had preached to him all those years, be calm on the mound, figure it out. And he allowed one runner or fewer in four consecutive starts to end the season last year. And he's back at it this year with that brilliant start, you know, in Boston. The first time his dad, like he opening day start, his dad couldn't be there, but he just had a son. And so the son was there. Everything in his life is changing going through. And I think he knows the changeup is his best pitch. He put 3 or 4 miles an hour on his fastball, but I think he was throwing his changeup a little too hard as well. I think he feels like right now everything is kind of in sync and he is much more at peace. And I think we're going to see that in results, to be honest, because the guy's got the talent, but I think he just went through one hellish year. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, people really didn't know much about that.
Yeah, hell of a bounce back that we've seen from John Means from all of that adversity and the change, the curveball, cool things that we're going to be keeping our eye on every time John Means tanks the mound. That's Dan Connolly, our Baltimore Orioles beat writer here at The Athletic. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today on The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, moving right along in this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Next up, C. Trent Rosecrans, our Cincinnati Reds beat writer. Trent, thanks so much for joining us, man, to talk about the hottest team in baseball. How you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm just riding the wave. That's what we do here in Cincinnati. Right? Going for its waves.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this offense is doing, producing waves. We've got so many different waves we can talk about. The one I want to start with is the Tyler Naquin wave. I mean, you got people in the opposite corner of Ohio probably saying, "What the hell, Tyler? Where's this been for years?" I think this was maybe the player Cleveland thought he was going to become after that rookie year in 2016, 296, 372, 514, 14 homers that season. But then health really got in his way. He never became anything more than a part-time player in Cleveland. Gets another shot in Cincinnati. The guy's already got 4 homers and 13 RBIs in his first 23 trips to the plate. What's going right for Tyler Naquin right now other than the results?
Well, I think you hit on it. He's healthy. I mean, this is a guy who's always been talented. I mean, he's a first-round draft pick. You know, what did he finish, second or third in the rookie of the year in 2016? I mean, he is a talented player. He's got quick hands, plenty of power. I mean, his first one on, what is today? Today is, we're recording
today's
this on
Thursday.
So Tuesday, he hit it out of the ballpark, like literally out of the ballpark. I went down, I went to right field and was like asking around. And I asked a couple people, like, "Oh yeah, dude, it went over like this, like Budweiser seating area in right field. Went over out of the ballpark, some dude walking his kid on a stroller on the street outside, just picked up the ball and kept walking." So give the baby a baseball, a Tyler Naquin ball that landed in the street. That doesn't happen very often. You know, I can think of just like two others, a Juan Francisco and then the Adam Dunn one that ended up in the river. That's it. That's unbelievable, you know, because the night before Mike Moustakas hit one up in that bar and I was thinking, man, I haven't seen many in that bar. And then Tyler Naquin the next day hits one out of it. But really, it's just he's healthy And then Nick Senzel gets hurt, diving for a ball. Not, you know, it's just a quick thing that, like, he didn't feel right that night, but he's back in the lineup, or he's back playing the next day. But that gave Naquin a shot in the lineup. Shogo Akiyama starts the season on the disabled or the injured list now. Still not used to that. Mm-hmm. Starts on the injured list. That gets Naquin kind of maybe even on the team. And as the left-hander on the bench, Jesse Winker's out sick. Gets more at-bats for Tyler Naquin. And he's the healthy one. That's where it is. And so, like, this is a guy who's, like, not even supposed to be there. With Shogo Akiyama and Jesse Winker, other left-handed bats in the outfield, Naquin was, you know, fringe guy to make this team, but he was healthy and they really liked what they saw in spring. He was doing this in spring. He's a guy who can play center field, especially with Akiyama out. They needed someone who could cover innings if something happened with Senzel. Speaking of guys who have had injury issues in the past and staying on the field. So stars aligned, he's healthy, and he's crushing.
Yeah, and getting chances to lead off while he's playing, too, kind of adds to the at least short-term fantasy appeal of Tyler Naquin. Jonathan India has looked good so far on this young season, Trent, hitting the ball really hard. I think he's got 8 hard-hit batted balls and like 18 batted ball events so far. He's always shown good plate discipline in the minors, and much like Naquin, he's finally healthy. What do you see coming from India here in the next few weeks? Does he have a path to move up out of the bottom half of this lineup?
It depends. I mean, where do you put him in this lineup? I mean, that's the thing right now with the way people are doing it, the way they're producing. Where do you do it? They're going pretty much a left-right, because with what the personnel that they have right now, they can alternate. And that's with the 3-batter minimum. That's something that they've looked at pretty hard. So it's interesting because, you know, you look up and down the lineup. Who's not producing? I mean, I guess Joey Votto's off to a slow start, but are you going to move Joey Votto? I don't know if that's going to happen yet. And actually, if you look a little deeper, Joey Votto's hitting the ball pretty hard. And so I think those are going to, that might come around. He might not, but does it, I guess that hurts his plate appearances, but he's coming up with guys on base all the time. You know, Nick Senzel, I think Nick Senzel yesterday, Wednesday, in the 7th, he tripled and scored a guy. I think it was Moustakas. That was the first time he was stranded all season. He had been on base the first 9 times. He had scored all 9 times. And a lot of that was because, well, Jonathan India was hitting behind him. And Jonathan India was like 7-for-9 with runners in scoring position to start the season.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Again, this offense top to bottom, a good problem to have that they've got so many guys producing that you're saying, do we move Joey Votto down? And obviously, I don't think anyone's expecting that anytime soon. A move that some people are maybe going to be expecting sometime soon is perhaps getting Eugenio Suarez out of the shortstop position. It's something that at least us in the fantasy world are wondering when the other shoe drops. 3 errors, 2 errors on opening day, 3 errors on the season. It feels as though this can't last forever. If that does happen, how do the pieces fit? When will the Reds say enough? And if they do say enough, how do those moving pieces end up fitting?
Where do you put it? I mean, that's the question. It's like, you know, especially, you know, one of the big parts of this was because they saw Jonathan India as a guy who was ready and they wanted India in the lineup. And honestly, I think part of it was they looked at it and they said, if we do this, we're not as good defensively at shortstop, but we're better at third defensively and we're better at second defensively with India over Moustakas at second and Moustakas over Suarez at third. If we do a lot of shifting, maybe we can negate some of the problems with Suarez at short and hope he settles in. But again, like, there's no DH. Maybe this happens next year where Jose Garcia comes in as your shortstop. You move Suarez back to third, Moustakas to first, Votto to DH. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that we see that. I think they're in this for quite a while. I think you could see some late inning defensive replacements, so some Kyle Farmer action at shortstop, and Kyle Farmer's looked really good defensively I mean, since last year, since he's really kind of started playing there, he's a very good shortstop. He's not the flashiest, but he's a guy who gets to everything and makes every play. Like, you know, it's almost, I remember it was like the Zach Cozart, where it's like, it was hit and you just start writing 6-3. And that's kind of how you feel about Zach, or Kyle Farmer. I'm not there with Eugenio Suarez.
Trent, I want to ask you about a couple of the back-end starters, Jeff Hoffman and Jose De Leon. I think if I go back to the Fantasy Baseball and 15 Reds preview that you did with Beller and Al, TJ Antone was a guy that I thought, well, if they're missing some guys to begin the season, he has to be in the rotation. He's not right now. He's in short relief. Hoffman and De Leon both looked pretty good their first time out. What did you see in their starts, and how sustainable do you think that early success could be?
Did you talk to Nando about Jose De Leon?
Oh, all the time. All the time.
Whether we want to or not, we're talking to him about him.
Yeah, unprompted.
You think I've ever talked to him about Jose De Leon? I mean, Jose De Leon is a guy who's got great stuff. I mean, there's no question. And so it's interesting. If he can keep the walks down, he's going to strike batters out. Mm-hmm. And you saw that the other day. And it's just, I think so much of him is trusting his stuff. Sonny Gray pitched in Louisville the other day, did 4 2/3 innings, said he felt great. Got challenged, actually, with some bunt plays, you know, fielding bunts. And if you're talking about a bad back, that's a great thing to be challenged with and come through on the other side. So I don't know how much longer they're going to have to worry about these guys, but then again, it gives you this great kind of problem to have, kind of like what we're talking about, Shohei Akiyama and Jesse Winker coming back in the outfield. Those guys, I think they're short-term solutions, but you could also see them long bullpen, that maybe you have a shorter leash with a Wade Miley, who just, he just went out and shoved the other day too. Mm-hmm. Again, these are all one starts. You know, we saw Luis Castillo look awful in one start and then look like Luis Castillo, well, against the Pirates. But actually, he didn't even really look like Luis Castillo against the Pirates, because he didn't get a lot of strikeouts. He looked like Wade Miley. We had a 2-hour, 35-minute game where the Reds scored 11 runs after the day after a 2-hour, 35-minute where they scored 14 runs. So I think it was 2 15-run games in a row where it was 2 hours, 35 minutes. So Rob Manfred loved it. It was offense and quick games. So we'll call those a Manfred. More than 10 total runs. Yeah. Less than three hours. Is a Manfred. So we got two Manfreds in a row. Yeah. What was the question? Oh, those guys. I think those are the type of players that I kind of referenced it in a story. The Reds aren't going to be spending and getting Trevor Bauer on the open market. What they're going to be doing is searching for their type of pitchers on either the trade market, a guy like, you know, Jeff Hoffman, a change of scenery guy, or the free agent reclamation projects. Jeff Hoffman is a guy with a really high spin rate. You know, they got another guy in the bullpen, Cino Perez. You know, I guess if you're a fantasy guy, he's not high in your radar, but man, is he good. And he may be in the next year or two. But these are guys that they identify their type of pitcher, bring them in. They do a couple of things really well, and that's what this pitching staff, this development staff with Derek Johnson and Eric Jaggers really specifies, finds their guys, Kyle Bodie, of course, and develops them and gives them that confidence. And I think that's what you've saw from Hoffman and De Leon, is that confidence coming out, and they pitched with confidence. And I'm guessing they have more confidence after those starts.
Derek and I talk about it all the time. The teams we want to trust with pitchers, and the Reds are one of those that we mention again and again and again. Twins, Astros, these teams that we just trust to get the most. Yeah, right, exactly. And we like to go in that direction in the fantasy world, and that's what led us to so many of these Reds. So hopefully they can keep it going. Trent, thanks so much for joining us here on this edition of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Anytime, guys.
And hey, coining a phrase. I mean, we can maybe get Manfred going. We got a Manfred and a Maddox.
A Manfred.
It's beautiful. All right. Thanks, Trent.
See ya.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, Derek, let's move along here to the back half of the show. And it's something that always stands out to me, whether we're talking fantasy baseball, fantasy football, fantasy whatever. The easiest thing to tell people to do, easiest possible piece of advice you can tell people to do early in a season is don't overreact. Don't worry about it. It's just one game. It's just one week. It's just three series. You know, whatever the case may be, it's the easiest thing to do. And I would also say that like 98% of the time, it's the right thing to do. But that leaves that 2% of the time. That does leave that little percent of the time where it actually is the right thing to do to what feels like an overreaction in the moment, but ultimately proves itself to be the correct reaction down the road. So we're going to eschew that easy, don't worry about it, don't overreact. We're going to get rid of that piece of advice, and we're going to give you some things that we think you should overreact to right now. We've got a few apiece, so Derek, why don't you kick us off here?
Yeah, maybe you can celebrate about this one. Byron Buxton's continued power surge to begin the season. One of the home runs he hit in the opening series against the Brewers was a 452-foot shot at American Family Field. It was an absolute murder ball. He's hitting the ball the opposite way a little bit, too. He's already walked twice in the shortened season. All the things that Buxton was showing in 2020, the power-heavy skill set, it looks like that was real. It's only five more games, but his last 44 games now, Byron Buxton has 16 home runs. This is increasingly something to notice. The strikeout rate's actually down a little bit to begin the season as well, just 4 Ks in 16 plate appearances. Obviously, none of those things have statistically stabilized yet, but I think we are seeing the transformation of a player, and frankly, our Twins beat writer, Dan Hayes, told us this was happening on the Fantasy Baseball and 15 Twins preview, and I didn't want to believe him because my version of Byron Buxton is a 20-homer, 40-steal guy, and I just can't come down from that. But if Buxton's really going to be a 30-plus homer guy that steals 15 or 20 bases and play great defense, that's a superstar sort of player. They've had a couple injuries early in the season. He's dealt with an illness, but he's actually hit third on occasion. So They definitely look at him as a different player, and his approach early on looks like he's really made some significant changes.
You add him to the rest of that lineup, too, to the guys who we knew coming into the year were going to hit and hit the way that they have for years now. And then you throw a top-level 95th percentile Byron Buxton into the mix, and watch out. That Twins offense just looking absolutely lethal once again. I think you do overreact to that as well. I think that is a great call by you. I'm going to take us to the negative side of things, and something I am perfectly comfortable, quote, overreacting to is the immense struggles that we have seen from Javier Baez and from Keston Hira. Both of these guys, similar, I would say, in style, they just can't make any contact. I mean, that's really the issue here. Javier Baez has struck out in 43.5% of his 23 trips to the plate this season. Keston Hira in even 50% in his 20 trips. So that's 10 strikeouts in 20 plate appearances for Keston Hira. And the problem here with both of these guys, DVR, is that this is nothing new. I mean, Javier Baez, going back to his debut season in 2014, this was always going to be the thing that held him back. He was always going to be a high strikeout player, and that's held true. Even in his 2018 near MVP season, had a great year, struck out 26% of the time. It was manageable enough down at that level, but that's still a lot of times to be striking out, and it's climbed every year since. 27.8 in 2019, 31.9 last year, and now this year looking at 43.5% strikeout rate in his first 23 plate appearances, and just looks out of sorts, just looks bad. All the things that, if you've watched Javier Baez at all the things that you know can get him into trouble, he's getting into trouble. Missing high fastballs, flailing at breaking balls that are down and away and ultimately end up out of the zone, working counts in a way that just doesn't feel like it's really in his game, getting too deep into counts, letting hittable pitches go by early in the count only to work himself into a pitcher's count later. It just, everything that would have you concerned about Javier Baez has happened in the first week of the season. And I just don't think there's not enough contact skill for him to override what is happening here. And so I am very concerned about what we've seen from him this season. Keston Hira, I mean, that was the problem with him too, right? 34.6% strikeout rate last year. Even the awesome, awesome 2019 season that had me buying him as an immediate star, 30.7% strikeout rate and 350 trips to the plate. I mean, that is significant. You're striking out that much with that much opportunity. That has to have you concerned. And then this year, I mean, he hasn't found it. He doesn't have a hit. 20 plate appearances, no hits and 10 strikeouts. I mean, everything is just totally, totally off for Keston Hira. I'm overreacting to the point where I don't think I'm trying to get rid of these guys for like 75 cents on the dollar. But if someone comes to me with an attractive enough offer where I would not have taken player X over Baez or Hira a week or 2 weeks ago, I would at least consider it, because I think with these strikeout concerns that these guys already have taking root this early in the season, it could be something that hamstrings both of them for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I think the things that I'm more willing to overreact to or just react to this early, they're going to be often extensions of what we saw in the shortened season. Proof that things that were happening over a 60-game stretch last year weren't complete flukes. With Keston Hira, I think there's more reason to be optimistic than there is with Baez, given the difference in age, given that Hira's moving to a new position. We all think like, oh, playing first base is easy. You know, the guy that can't really run that fast, the old guy, whoever it is on your softball team that plays first base, probably isn't the most athletic person on the field, but they do the job capably. Playing first base in the big leagues is pretty different. Hira got spun around the bag, got run over in the Twin Series by Mitch Garver. You know, just had a couple little miscues like that. You wonder how much players carry a new position where they're struggling to the plate with them, right? I mean, Keston Hira is there to hit. Clearly, the Brewers believe in him enough to let him be a first baseman, to move him from second to first. And I wonder if when you're not playing well defensively, you start gripping the bat a little tighter, trying to prove like, hey, I'm a first baseman. I'm a 40 home run guy now. I'm going to hit for average and for a ton of power. I'm going to do everything. And you're trying to do it on every single swing. I wonder if there's a little bit of that happening with Keston Hira right now. They could just give him an off day and then bring him back and just kind of see if that helps him reset and get right at the plate. So I definitely think you're right to be concerned, because the strikeout rate jumped last season and high fastballs were a big problem. If Keston Hira is still chasing high fastballs here in 2021, it's going to be very difficult for him to bring the strikeout rate down that we saw a year ago.
It's, I think the point you make about extension of 2020 being the thing that you're more willing to react to, I think that's a great point. It's something that we should be thinking about across the league, and not just with Buxton or Baez or Hira. It's a good thing to bring into your early 2021 analysis as you are looking at players on your team and players across the league that maybe you're thinking about trying to make a trade offer for or something like that. A lot of things that we saw in 2020 could carry over into this season in a way that is instructive and actionable in this next new fantasy baseball season. The next guy up, though, didn't look so great in 2020, off to a very fast start in 2021. Let me just say, Derek, with all the exposure I have to Gavin Lux, I hope you're right about this.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is my world, so I can construct the narratives however I want.
It is your world. That's right, DVR.
by this is my world, I mean this segment. Like, this part of the segment is mine, so I can choose whatever path I want. So, yes, the floor is mine, so I can make up whatever narrative I want. That's what I should have said. K rate's down. Walk rate is holding steady at 7.4% early on. Haven't seen Gavin Lux barrel a ball yet, but he is hitting the ball fairly hard. Mm-hmm. Average exit velocity is up. Again, these types of things in small samples don't mean a lot. But when you look at everything, we're seeing a 100th percentile sprint speed. We're seeing great consistent defense at second base. Like everything that Gavin Lux wasn't doing in the shortened season, he's doing already. I think he's beginning to deliver on that promise as a top prospect. You know, long term, maybe he's a guy that ends up in a corner outfield spot. I'm not worried about that at all right now. He's their second baseman. He's getting regular playing time. They're giving everybody days off because they have depth. So I'm not looking at the one day off that he's had so far and saying, well, Gavin Lux is going to get a day off every four or five games, so he's only got an 80% playing time share. I don't think that's the case. I think they're showing a lot of confidence in him with the way they've used him so far. And early on, he's rewarding them for that. I'm here for that. I think this is going to be the big breakout year. I've said this before. Gavin Lux, based on where he was going in drafts and what happened to him last season, to me looked a lot like Kyle Tucker did a year ago entering 2020. And I just think we're going to get that massive step forward. We're going to be talking about Gavin Lux as an early round pick for a very long time.
Do you have any, I don't know if concern's the right word, but I guess are you willing to say whatever about his lineup placement?
I am, because the Dodgers, if you look at projections, the Dodgers are, I believe, projected to score the most runs per game of any team in the league. So You have to consider that. I mean, just crossing sports for a second, do you value six targets from Patrick Mahomes more than you value nine targets from Mitchell Trubisky? Right, like,
how'd I know that was the quarterback you were gonna pull out there? I just knew it.
I don't know. I saw your face on the screen, and I just thought of Mitch. So
it's one and the same. Mitch is handsome. Right. I'll take it.
So yeah, I mean, like, if you put Anthony Miller in the Chiefs' offense and give him five or six targets, or you put him in the Bears' offense and give him nine from Mitch or Foles, you'd actually rather have him probably get five or six targets from Mahomes, because there's a much greater chance of him scoring on those plays, right? I mean, I think that sort of logic applies when we're talking about an elite of the elite sort of offense. So I do think lineup position generally matters, but for a lineup that will turn over as much as the Dodgers will and score runs top to bottom, I'm a lot less worried about where Lux is placed than if he were in more of like a league average sort of offense.
I'm totally with you too. Would we love to see Gavin Lux hitting second? Of course we would, but with his pedigree, with the way he has gotten going, with what we know the skill set is, and with the lineup around him, absolutely fine living with him hitting 7th, 8th in this Dodgers lineup, game in and game out. I'm going to go to another team in this division, Garrett Hampson in the Rockies. I feel very good about Garrett Hampson's playing time. I guess that's what I'm reacting to here. He has sat one game. He has started every other game for the Rockies this season. And I feel very comfortable that that's going to be the case for Garrett Hampson. I think we are getting Garrett Hampson everyday player in a way that we haven't quite gotten it in his career. And this is something we've always wanted with Garrett Hampson. If you look back also at the starts, you see him mostly hitting in the top third of the order a week ago, he did hit eighth, but then second, and first in his last four starts. And so I feel pretty good about the batting order placement for him too. And this is also another thing, DVR, that is one of those carryovers from 2020. Played 53 games, got 184 plate appearances last year. In the context of 2020, that's effectively a full season. And now here he is starting every game but one, 25 plate appearances, stole three bases on a Wednesday night. Obviously, if you told me he had three stolen bases for the entire season, one week into the season, I would prefer for it to have been three games with one steal rather than one game with three steals. Give you a little bit more confidence in the longevity of that for him. But we know he's a stolen base guy. We know he has the speed, and he flashed the ceiling of it in that game last night for the Rockies. So I think this is a thing. I think this is going to be a thing all season. I think he's going to play every day, and I think he's going to hit in the top of this order. I don't really see anyone who challenges him there. I think they would prefer Ryan McMahon to be a middle of the order guy. Obviously, Story, Blackman, Crone, those guys are going to live in the middle of the order. I don't really see someone, you know, like Chris Owings or Jonathan Daza or even Sam Hilliard pushing Garrett Hampson out of the lineup without some help from Garrett Hampson, right? They're not going to bully their way into it just on their own. Hampson is going to have to struggle also And I feel good enough about what we've seen from him in the early going this year and just the sort of player he is and what the Rockies need him to be, how long he has been there, how long he's been working toward this moment, that he's going to be able to stick. So I feel very comfortable with Hampson's playing time, and I'm basically comfortable across the board, no matter what size or shape your league is, trusting him as a regular starter.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing everything you'd like to see a top-of-the-order guy do early in the year. He slashed the K rate way down, 12% so far, walking 16% of the time. Again, we're talking about six games, but these are massive changes for a guy who struck out more than 30% of the time in the shortened season and has struck out nearly 28% of the time for his career. He's hitting the ball in the air more often, making more hard contact. I mean, really doing everything well right now. And the thing that I like about Garrett Hampson, for selfish reasons, mostly playing in center field, which means when Brendan Rodgers eventually gets healthy, the return of Brendan Rodgers shouldn't have any major impact on Garrett Hampson's playing time. You know, they'll bump probably Josh Fuentes out of the lineup, play Ryan McMahon regularly at third, and let Brendan Rodgers simply settle in at second base. So I like that too, because I think previously when I looked at this depth chart, I was concerned that Hampson would get squeezed if Rodgers was healthy.
Yeah, it's a great point. I totally forgot about Brendan Rodgers too. But yeah, it seems like he has settled in to that center field position, and that really does put the icing on the cake when it comes to buoying his playing time. Let's go with a couple of more things here, and let's move to the mound. We're both liking the strikeout returns that we've seen on a couple of pitchers early on in the season. Who do you got here, and why are you trusting it?
Yeah, Sandy Alcantara, I mean, he's striking a lot of guys out, 35% K rate early on. He's lived kind of in the low 20% range for his career to this point. The walk rate's still down where it was a year ago, so that's a good sign as well, because when he first arrived, I think there was a considerable amount of walk rate risk. And I think the other thing that's pretty interesting about Alcantara to this point is the way he's been using his four-seamer. He's not as sinker-dependent as he has been in the past. You look at the four-seamer still being part of the mix there. Like, I think that's kind of interesting. We'll see how that plays out over a longer window. Like, over two starts, it looks similar to the past, but I think there was one start in particular where he was using that four-seamer a lot more effectively than he has in previous years. So if that continues, look out. I mean, there's definitely... It's kind of like the Dustin May effect. Like, if you watch Dustin May throughout last season, especially in the playoffs, you look at him, you're like, how does this guy not strike more guys out? Mm-hmm. Sandy Alcantara has that same sort of vibe. When you've watched him in previous years, you're like, come on, like, how is he not getting 7 or 8 Ks every single time he takes the ball? He's looking like that guy early on, and I believe it because the stuff is good enough for it. It just seems like the Marlins maybe have some better game plans, and he's executing those game plans much more effectively early on.
Yeah, something I'm keeping an eye on with him is the changeup. 22.7% usage through two starts, right? It's two starts. We talked about this earlier. We were looking at John Means. Like, I don't want to draw too many conclusions off of pitch usage data from a couple of starts. We'll get a few more starts into the season, and then maybe we can start taking it more at face value. But it is that two starts gives us something to watch, and then maybe four or five starts gives us something to trust. So two starts, 40 changeups thrown, 22.7%, 20 whiffs on those 40 changeups for Sandy Alcantara. And this is just a step up from last year, 10.3% on the changeup. 2019, 12.1%. Be very interested to see if this becomes a go-to pitch for Alcantara in this 2021 season. For me, DVR, I am going to Yusei Kikuchi and the strikeout numbers that we have seen from him. And this goes back to the spring, right? The one of our favorite adages, spring stats don't matter unless they do. And, you know, with what we saw from Kikuchi in the spring, with the big time uptick in fastball velocity from him in the spring, that put him on the radar in a way that he just wasn't. I mean, if you go back to early drafts in February or late January, you didn't really see Yusei Kikuchi's name popping up much, but by the time we were really drafting in mid and late March, you were starting to see it because of that increase in velocity that he experienced in the spring, and it carried right over into the regular season, regularly just sitting at 97, 98 with that fastball, and that has redounded to his benefit in a big way to start this season. Just one start so far, went 6 innings in that game, struck out 10 batters. And right there, we're talking about potentially a different guy, because 2019, his rookie year, 116 Ks in 161 innings. Then last year, the results weren't great, but he picked it up there. 47 strikeouts in 47 innings. Saw the ERA come down a little bit from his 2019 season, but still not great results. if these strikeouts can be for real now this season, if he takes another step forward with the strikeout stuff and ends up being a legitimate guy with this velocity, then I think we're talking about an entirely different pitcher. I think you can almost throw out 2019 and 2020 and look at him as a totally different pitcher from the guy we've seen thus far in his major league career. And again, because of that velocity, that is something that is substantive change. That is a meaningful, obvious change, and it would let us ignore what we've seen from him so far in his major league career. I feel very good about it, and I think we're talking about a totally different Kikuchi this year than we were previously in his career.
Yeah, I'm more 1 foot in with Kikuchi, I think, right now, because of the matchup against the Twins this week in weekly leagues, I was kind of looking for reasons not to play him just to be a little careful. But I think the underlying numbers last season were really encouraging. I think you're right to be on him, and I'm still optimistic that I'm going to use him more often than not. I have him in mixed tout wars, the 15-team league. I just think the Twins are right at that point where if I'm looking at someone who still needs to sort of prove it, they're just at that line where I'm cautious enough to go another direction.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair too. I mean, I don't know if I would even trust him in that spot against the Twins, as good as that offense is with what we've seen from him. I love him getting a start against a team like the Twins, though, this early, coming off the strong first start of the season. I love to see him get challenged by an offense this good, this powerful, this dangerous, and see what he is able to do with it. Another guy who we will learn a whole lot from in his next outing, and then we will go from there. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you are watching on YouTube or listening on the app or on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you might be. We always appreciate the support. If you are on iTunes, Spotify, anything like that, please leave a rating, a review. We always appreciate getting those, seeing those, especially if they are positive, and always be sure to check us out at The Athletic as well. This show is back with you over the weekend on Sunday. That'll be the two of us, me and DVR, taking you through the waiver wire and FAB process going into the third week of the Major League Baseball season. And as will be the case all season, we will be streaming that one live. So look for a YouTube link sometime on Saturday or Sunday morning. We'll get that out. You can bring your questions that you might have as you are sitting down to make your FAB bids on Sunday. Until then, enjoy all the baseball. For Dan Connolly, C. Trent Rosecrans, and Derek Van Riper, I'm Michael Beller. We'll talk to you soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.